You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. In case you missed the breaking news at the top of the show, Google has been ordered to share some of its data and search results with rival companies, but it need not break up. That according to a federal judge's ruling earlier this afternoon. This is an absolutely landmark antitrust case. Watch this space about how this exactly moves forward at this time. It is huge. Also in the news this afternoon, Democratic leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer, has attacked Donald Trump's unlawful pocket rescission package and pointed Americans to look out for the September 30th government funding deadline. I wonder if Democrats, led by Senator Chuck Schumer, will hold the line this time around. Remember, they capitulated earlier this year when the last shutdown deadline loomed. In addition, we've got more than 85 American and international scientists that have condemned a Trump administration report that calls the threat of climate change overblown, saying the analysis is simply riddled with errors, misrepresentations, and cherry-picked data to fit a political agenda. This, of course, coming amid growing calls for DHHS Secretary RFK Jr. to resign. Now, what was very fascinating about what happened today related to some of this anti-science approach to things that we seem to be seeing from the Trump administration was that back in 2020, of course, Donald Trump took the stage and heralded the new COVID vaccine at that time. He called it a monumental national achievement, even called it one of the greatest miracles in the history of modern-day medicine, of any age of medicine. But today, Donald Trump appeared to raise doubts about the effectiveness of those very vaccines on his social media platform, and he demanded that companies like Pfizer make information and results available to the public, because I know I'm really good at analyzing medical testing data, given that I have no background in medicine or biology or chemistry. Okay, you get my point. It's really unclear what exact information he's talking about. And in light of all of this, we thought it was extremely important to be joined by an expert guest to help us unpack good immunization practices, good vaccine practices, given that we've all got kiddos that are headed back to school and we are all entering the cold and flu and, yes, COVID season. With that as prequel, I am so excited to be joined by Ryan Bender. He is the Director of Clinical Services for Forward Pharmacy. He works on their standard of care for immunization, comprehensive medication review, and health screening, as well as medication therapy management. You can find Forward Pharmacy in Cottage Grove, Cambridge, Columbus, Deerfield, and McFarland. So it is a community-based and locally focused pharmacy company. Welcome to the show, Ryan. I really appreciate you making time to help us all be prepared for this fall and winter season.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the basics. We understand that there has been a change in the COVID-19 vaccine eligibility. Can you explain to people what that means, what the eligibility rules are, and what they might want to be asking their doctors as we head into this fall season?
I can try. As you alluded to earlier, we are in a state of flux. Things feel somewhat upside down. Now, traditionally, vaccines are approved by the Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA, and then they're sent to the ACIP, ACIP, American Council on Immunization Practices, for recommendations. And then it's those recommendations are then sent to the CDC director to approve them. And so there really is a multi-stage process with different independent groups looking at the vaccines. So you have one group looking at to approve it for its use, and then another group looking at just how that's going to be used, which groups can get it. ACIP has not met to discuss COVID vaccines. In fact, they have a meeting scheduled for September, September 18th and 19th, though Senator Bill Cassidy has now called for that meeting to be postponed. So we don't know when the vaccines will officially be approved and recommended for use. Many people turn to their community pharmacy since the pandemic began with the COVID vaccines to get not just COVID shots, but flu shots and now other routine immunizations, including childhood immunizations. And people are looking to the pharmacist this year for these same recommendations. And what's tricky for pharmacists, as our authority to provide a vaccine outside of a clinic sphere, is based on that vaccine showing up on the list of CDC approved vaccines, or they call it the vaccine schedule. There's the adult vaccine schedule and the pediatric vaccine schedule, and that has not happened yet. So even though I may have a COVID vaccine at my pharmacy today, I will not be able to administer it just yet until the ACIP meets. And the thing about ACIP is the makeup has changed.
Yes. I talked about this last week on the program, Ryan, that basically RFK Jr. has replaced much of, if not all, I can't recall just off the top of my head sitting here with you and all of our listeners right now. He basically has replaced the membership of the ACIP and replaced it with folks who, according to some scientists and immunologists, think are basically a bit on the conspiracy theory end of the spectrum. I'm all for trust but verify. I'm all for good data and good science. And the tricky part here, Ryan, is we're talking about this on-label versus off-label use. And that's what the ACIP decides. Now, whereas a physician, a medical doctor, can prescribe something to a patient as an off-label use. So even if the COVID-19 vaccine is not listed by the ACIP for broad use, your physician could ostensibly override that. However, that is not true for pharmacists. They cannot go outside of those parameters. And a pharmacist, therefore, depending on what the ACIP eventually does here, will not be able to prescribe and administer COVID-19 boosters that don't meet those newly established indicators from the ACIP. I want to pause because that is the clear, you can get, your doctor can say you can get it, but you can't walk into your Walgreens, CVS, or of course, your Forward Pharmacy and have a pharmacist give you the COVID-19 vaccine if you are not one of the off-label intended recipients. Have I gotten that right? Because that is such a critical distinction.
So yes, when it sounds like the direction, and this is, I hate to speculate, but it seems like the direction that we're heading, the ACIP will likely, it sounds like, do what the FDA approval is, which is 65 and older is a blanket recommendation. Everyone over the age of 65 or 65 and older should get it. And those adults who are under the age of 65 can get it if they meet certain criteria. And those criteria are actually pretty broad, including one that just says physical inactivity. So there is that. However, though on one list, pregnancy is listed as a high-risk condition. On another list, it's specifically excluded from being an approval. So many professional organizations have stepped in with their recommendations. And it's important to note that professional organizations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics have for years made their own recommendations. What's different this year is they are not aligned with the CDC and the FDA. There is a departure between the two, and that is a first. There were 17 members of ACIP So we're at various places in their terms. They were considered experts in their field. Wisconsin has fielded a few in recent years. They were all fired all at once and replaced with 8 handpicked people who appear to have maybe letters and credentials behind their names, but many people point to a history of vaccine skepticism there. So we are in a period of flux, waiting to hear on COVID. Some things have not changed. Flu vaccine recommendations remain the same. About 42 varies on the year. People choose to get a flu shot every year, yet flu killed over 200 kids last year. So it's very important to get a flu shot. Those recommendations have not changed.
I think Ryan froze up a little bit. We're working and hoping that he comes back on. He's talking about this changeover in ACIP. And specifically the restocking of this critical board that determines, again, the vaccine schedules. Keep in mind that we now have vaccine skeptics that dominate this critical board. And this is happening here in Wisconsin, where we have a measles outbreak in Oconto County that, according to news reports this afternoon, we have 24 cases of measles now confirmed in Oconto County. So, Ryan, as you rejoined us, thank you so much. I think he's back. Let's check here. Ryan, can you explain to us some of the public health implications as the CDC is altering the COVID-19 vaccine guidelines and the vaccine and immunization schedules for both adults and kids in addition? I don't think we quite have him back. We're going to work to do that.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
No, there you are. Oh, there he's there.
Oh,
and there,
my gosh.
There you are. Why don't you do this, Ryan? Just shut off your camera. I'm going to put the phone number for the show and give us a call. Yep, and call us in. We'll have Ryan rejoin on the other side. These are the sorts of things that make me so concerned, especially with all of our kids going back to school. Measles, we thought we had eradicated it. And now here in our own beloved state, we're seeing a resurgence. And this is putting your kids' lives, your family's health at grave risk. Ryan's rejoining us. We've got about a minute left, Ryan. Can you just talk broadly about the public health implications for this stepping back from basic vaccine and immunization schedules and scientific best practices?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very dangerous. Measles is one of the most contagious things we know of, really. And it is so contagious that people who were born before a certain year, 1957, don't actually need the vaccine because they were just considered to have it. There's just very few people that could have not had it. And so, again, this is a disease that killed people. And I think by minimizing that, by weakening the public message behind it, it opens us up to diseases which not only can be harmful but also fatal.
Yeah, it is quite a challenging moment, I think, for all folks that work in public health, but also for folks that work in the field of my special guest for this half hour. He is Ryan Bender, the Director of Clinical Services for Forward Pharmacy. He is also a member of the Dane County Immunization Board, its vice chair. So Ryan's business is public health and knowing what the immunization and vaccination schedules are for adults and kids. We're going to review those schedules and how you might approach flu and cold vaccines and the COVID vaccine this coming fall and winter season, what questions you might want to ask your pharmacist and doctor when we return. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it is back to school, and that means back to flu for many of us with our kids joining with many other kids in close environments. You know, kids maybe not so great at the hand washing and the hand sanitizer use. And in advance of this cold and flu season, while there are increasing calls for Secretary of DHHS RFK Jr. to resign in the wake of what can only be described as the implosion at the CDC and the stocking of the critical vaccine and immunization scheduling board called the ACIP with vaccine skeptics, it's all the more important to understand how to advocate for yourself and your family's well-being this cold and flu season. We're joined by Ryan Bender, the Director of Clinical Services of Forward Pharmacy. Forward Pharmacy, a community-based, locally focused pharmacy in southwestern Wisconsin. Thanks for spending some more time with us, Ryan. Let's talk about parents and back to school. What should parents of school-age kids be looking at when it comes to immunizations and vaccines this cold and flu season? What should they be looking for and asking their physicians if they're concerned at all about the safety and efficacy of any of these vaccines?
So I think asking questions is great. And I think one of the jobs that healthcare providers have is to be a trusted messenger of science-based healthcare information. And that means not just talking, but listening. And I think it's very important to listen with respect and dig a little deeper. And I know that things can feel rushed, but as a healthcare provider, pharmacist, doctor, nurse, you know, asking questions, digging a little deeper about why somebody may be hesitant to get a vaccine, and trying to answer those questions truthfully, honestly, and with science, but also acknowledging any fears. And most patients, parents want to do what's best for their children, and they're getting a lot of conflicting messages. And so by telling parents that what is actually best for them and answering their questions and best for their children is vaccines. And so back to school, every kid should get a flu shot, definitely. And flu shots are beginning to become available this week. Usually they become available during the first week of September for many places. And also following the immunization schedule for children, AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, publishes a wonderful patient-friendly immunization schedule that tells parents what the child needs and when. Only a handful of those vaccines actually are required for school entry into Wisconsin. The school entry requirements, that's based on political decisions, not clinical decisions. And so you may have a parent who will only get what their child needs to keep attending school, but really that's only a small fraction of what the child would need to stay healthy.
Folks, again, we are joined by Ryan Bender, Director of Clinical Services for Forward Pharmacy. I want to talk just very briefly about mRNA and its use in vaccines. There seems to be a lot of misinformation out there. And I was hoping, Ryan, that you could help address the use of mRNA, how long it's been used, why it is safe, and debunk some of the myths that are out there for people.
Yeah, this is not new technology. And I use the word technology intentional. This is a really neat and really fascinating way and very safe way to not only protect an individual against infectious disease, but it has many other applications, including cancer. It also can protect entire populations very quickly. And one of the great successes, as you said at the top, during the first Trump administration, was the Operation Warp Speed. Essentially, the federal government said to six companies, you know, we will buy your failures. This out. And look how quickly we were able to get vaccines. It was before the end of the year that folks at hospitals, you know, those frontline folks were able to get their vaccines. And what a triumph. And so then you think in terms of a global threat, how quickly a society could protect itself using mRNA as opposed to the other ways of making vaccines, which require just long periods of time to grow cultures and to create those vaccines. mRNA is continually used in other applications that is not making the news. And so this is very safe. It is deployed hundreds of millions of doses. And without difficulty. Vaccines are the most studied health intervention we have in terms of its safety and its efficacy. And there's so many different groups of people in different levels that look at it, because it's given to otherwise healthy people. You know, the standard has to be just so high because you're giving it to somebody who doesn't have the disease. And so the vaccines are safe. They are effective. They are used widely and are used across a variety of applications.
Folks, again, that's Ryan Benner, Director of Clinical Services. He himself is a pharmacist. Ryan, to end, we've got a minute left. Tell folks just some best practices to keep them and their kids and their families safe and healthy this cold and flu season.
Absolutely. Please get vaccinated. That outside of clean drinking water, no other public health intervention has done more to save more lives than vaccines. And that's incredible. Only drinking water, clean drinking water, has done more. I encourage everyone out there, if you have any questions, if you're hearing conflicting information, talk to a healthcare professional. We want to be there. We want to help. We got into this line of work to help people. And I'm here because it breaks my heart when I see the science being dismissed and distrusted.
Thanks so much. We got to leave it there, Ryan. When I come back, I talk about Rebecca Bradley's departure from the Wisconsin Supreme Court next, and the record of the Republican who seeks to replace her. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. That you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. If you want to join the show, it's just me and you, everybody, for this last half hour, which is so nice to have some time together. And I wanted to share some breaking reporting from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just within the last hour. Milwaukee Police Association President Alex Ayala told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Tuesday that he is considering sending a letter to the White House requesting National Guard assistance following a series of what are called street takeovers over the Labor Day weekend that led to multiple arrests. He said this, quote, "My opinion is let's try something new. Let's see if maybe the National Guard can help Milwaukee curb some of this crime and some of the street takeovers and the church staffing and all the issues that we've had downtown." Ayala suggested that the National Guard troops would deter crime by being present in high crime areas of Milwaukee and said they could also perform crowd control. He did not say how long he'd like the troops to stay if they were deployed to the city. Mayor Cavalier Johnson said he believes the deployment of the National Guard to Milwaukee would both be unneeded and inappropriate. Governor Tony Evers called the National Guard the wrong people to send to Wisconsin and Milwaukee. Again, folks, National Guard, they're trained in disaster response and war. They are not trained in civil law enforcement. Most are not trained, nearly all are not trained in crowd control. That is not the purpose of the National Guard. And I have some process questions about this. First of all, did the union take a vote? Did the police officers in the MPA get together and take a vote on whether or not their president should get involved in this way in national politics? If not, why is president of the MPA, Mr. Ayala, doing this? I have to think there are members of the Milwaukee Police Department that think that they are perfectly capable of doing their jobs, that don't want any confusion in their chain of command. I have to imagine there might even be a Democrat or two, oh my goodness, or maybe somebody that just didn't vote for Donald Trump, that is a working police officer in the city of Milwaukee. So my question first is a process one to the president of the Milwaukee Police Association. Did you consult your membership, sir? Now recall, of course, that the Milwaukee Police Association also endorsed Donald Trump before the 2024 election. I wonder if they've polled their membership about some of Donald Trump's signature policies that will actually impact their members' day-to-day lives. You know, things like Medicare and Medicaid funding, things like educational funding and the shutting down of the Department of Energy. I wonder what the process was before President Ayala decided to come out and say publicly, I think I should curry favor with the president without consulting. And again, if he did, I will stand corrected. But this doesn't, he didn't say, well, we talked to our members and our members voted and they want me to ask for this assistance. Where is the call for additional federal law enforcement funding? Where is the call from the president to defend the federal grants that are awarded to the city of Milwaukee that assist with law enforcement? Because those grants have been placed under threat by the Trump administration. This just, there's so much about this. From forget the merits for a moment, just from a process perspective. If I was a member of a union and I had my union leader drawing up sides in a way that put my membership at odds with the community in which I lived and worked, which is what this ostensibly does. I mean, Milwaukee is overwhelmingly a Democratic city. Why? I don't understand how it helps a relationship of trust between the police and the folks and the communities that they serve to do this. And I would also urge caution to Democrats in responding to this. These street takeovers, if you don't know what they are, I had to look it up this weekend. I had no idea what this was. It's a bunch of hooligans and tomfoolery acting like jerks. They basically drive muscle cars into an intersection with lights and they block the intersection and then they do like donuts and stuff. The stuff that kids have been doing for a long time, is it disruptive? Yes. Should it be shut down? Yes. Was it shut down by MPD? Also, yes. So you have some bad actors in like a newfangled little teenage rebellion thing going on over a three-day weekend. And for that, you say to the families of Wisconsin, your sons and daughters that signed up for the National Guard for natural disaster response to defend our country, to be maybe war fighters, you, President Ayala, are now saying to them, well, you should come and do MPD's job for it. I don't know what to make of that. Your reactions are welcome. I find it disturbing as a process point. I find it disturbing in terms of the relationship between MPD and the communities in which those officers live and serve and work. And why is it that guy's job? To call for the, like, that's not your job. If you want to be, maybe he's got aspirations to run for mayor. That would explain it. And then again, you're back to, that's in your own personal interest, so why are you doing it? Again, that's just breaking news this afternoon. Story broke by the Journal Sentinel, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, by Lawrence Andrea of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you for bringing us that story. We'll continue that discussion. If you have thoughts, I want to hear them. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Mark from Sussex chiming in on the text line. I love that Dems are fighting the National Guard's assistance when a majority of people want the help. Says who? The majority of Milwaukeeans don't want the National Guard in their city. And again, I'm looking for that poll, Mark. I'm looking for the vote of the Milwaukee Police Association union membership that says, yep, uh-huh, let's ask for that. I'm not seeing that. A majority of Washington, D.C. residents, there's poll after poll. They don't want the National Guard. There's same thing in LA, same thing in Chicago. And here's the deal, Mark. The way that the people speak many times is by electing people to lead their jurisdictions, their cities. And the elected officials, who are the elected voice of their constituents, is saying, we don't want this. There also simply aren't polls to support that position. Mark, I have talked to people in Washington, D.C. I know a lot of folks that live there. That is not the majority view. Oh, it's great that Donald Trump tried to federalize the D.C. police. That's simply not True. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Joe from Madison, I'm skipping ahead of myself. Thanks for your patience this afternoon. You say what?
I say that people are not thinking this through with any sense of what are the costs, long-term, short-term. Short-term, we're looking at a $1 million a day being spent in D.C. on this National Guard contingent. $1 million a day. Okay, and we see them, what, mulching and raking and doing items like that? Clearly, it's not the kind of things that they signed up for. It's an insult for them to be doing that. There was a staff of 200 people that were employed by the National Park Service that were employed to do this kind of work. They were cut down to 20 in the big, beautiful bill. So what makes more sense, to have people in the local community given a job in which they do this work, or transport these people away from their homes, away from their families, pay costs $1 million a day to have them being raking and mulching? It's insanity. We look like nutballs, absolute nutballs. And he's talking about doing this in 17 more big blue cities because he wants to wave his little thing around. This is just absolutely nuts. It's costing us a ton of money, and it's also costing these cities. They said restaurants are down, their attendance is down by like 30-40% because people aren't going out because they're troops in the street. So, okay, you cut crime. Did you? What's going to happen in a week? What's going to happen in a month? What's going to happen in a year? I would really encourage you, Maggie, to talk to somebody who's done a fabulous job on this. I'm sure you know them. The mayor of Brendan Scott, the mayor of Baltimore, has taken a city that was really under siege. See if you can get him. He's a young guy, full of ideas and full of results. What he has done has worked. He's employed people in his city, and the crime rate has dropped 30%. It's a remarkable achievement, and he's just smart. He knows how to do these things. He's somebody that we should be looking at for inspiration. Instead of imagining that all of our dangerous cities are going to have dangerous blue cities, not any of the dangerous red cities. Memphis isn't going to see this kind of thing, but certainly Chicago might. And Milwaukee might. So I would encourage people to look at the cost. $1 million a day. Really? How long are we going to keep this up for? Really? Is this what?
Yeah. Is this really what we want? I just want to share this small anecdote, and then we've got other breaking news. I'm going to take some more texts and phone calls. When I was a very young person, I got a scholarship to go do some research and to study with a professor from the University of California, Santa Barbara in Honduras. And I got my 16-year-old butt on an airplane. I think it was scaring my parents to death to watch their daughter fly off to a country that neither of my folks had ever been to. And I will tell you this, when I got off the airplane in Honduras, it was the first time I saw military personnel like deployed with the big guns. Just, they were ubiquitous. They were everywhere. And I remember being afraid. That is the point. Now, making people afraid, yep, you probably won't see any street takeovers, but there's this concept in law enforcement and in war about proportional, and the least oppressive response, the least freedom limiting response to create public safety. Why is the overkill? Why is the making people afraid okay? Cannot we both create safety in our streets in every community, which all of us want, myself and every Democrat I know of good faith included? Can't we do that in the least restrictive, frankly, least fear-inducing place? I don't want to live in an America or a Milwaukee. When I go out for a jog, I see armed military roaming my streets. I don't want to live in fear. And if the only way that in a Trump America and a Trump Wisconsin, we can achieve safety by instilling oppression and fear upon us all, that is not a safety that I want any part of. Peace at any price, safety at any price, is not an American ideal. We're going to take a breath. I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to continue to take your calls and texts, and we will get to the Republican that seeks to replace Rebecca Bradley on the Supreme Court next. Oh, by the way, tens of thousands of documents. The Epstein files, in part, are being released this afternoon. No news happening today, folks. So stay with me as I break it all down for you. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, try as Donald Trump might, he cannot shake the Epstein file controversy, which has been plaguing his administration for months. Now, what's fascinating about the release of documents, some documents heavily redacted. We'll see what happens with them. People will review them. There'll be lots of commentary here. What's interesting about the DOJ's apparent epiphany that they needed to release these files is that it conveniently trailed the work by GOP Representative Thomas Massie, a Republican of Kentucky, earlier today to force a floor vote compelling the Justice Department to release all the files from the Jeffrey Epstein case. This is one of the first House actions as lawmakers are returning to Washington, D.C. this week from a five-week recess. Again, he filed this discharge petition earlier today, and then what? Voila! The DOJ then starts releasing some of these files. Here's what Massie had to say. Earlier this afternoon, my staff has taken a quick look. This is a quote. My staff has done a quick look at it, and it looks like a bunch of redacted documents and nothing new. So it's not going to suffice. So the law and order president won't get real with the American people about a billionaire sex trafficker that was the basis for all of the QAnon conspiracy theories that he and his supporters touted for a decade plus to attack Democrats. But now it's all fine. We're good. Never mind. Go home. And yes, I'll pardon men that beat police officers on January 6th. But he's the law and order. Okay. You get my consternation here. Watch this space. Much is going to continue to happen. I want to bring on Ollie from the Northwoods. Thanks for your patience, my friend. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Well, I just wanted to call and say, is anybody surprised about that guy wanting Trump and his troops to come in to Milwaukee? There was a huge red flag last week when Vance came and started talking about all the crime that was going on in Milwaukee. You knew then and there that they were square in the bullseye of Donald Trump and the GOP.
Yeah, no doubt, Ollie. And here's the thing I want to make really clear to people. Armed military on regular American main streets is scary. It's scary. Period. Full stop. Now, we've talked about the fact that the places to which Donald Trump has been deploying or threatening to deploy U.S. military to square off against our citizens are largely run by black and brown folks as mayors. But here's the other thing that we all need to look at very critically. Is there any coincidence that many of these cities are also key Democratic voting blocks in states that are critically important in election cycles? Why is it that it is only in these cities that Donald Trump wants to send troops to? I'm just asking the question. Just asking the question, is it a coincidence that especially a place like Milwaukee or a Chicago or a Baltimore also are extraordinarily important cities that vote overwhelmingly blue in critical election cycles? I'm just asking the question. An incredibly busy, busy news day. I wanted to spend some time because I didn't get to celebrate the good news with all of you that Rebecca Bradley is now seeking greener pastures that do not include the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I do want to say, listen, everybody that serves the public in some way, thank you for your service. But Rebecca Bradley, over the last 5 to 6 years, has become so unabashedly partisan, and her language and rhetoric so incendiary, she has got to go. I was happy to see her go. And it is critically important that we've got a Wisconsin Supreme Court where it's not, you know, a race to the bottom when it comes to who can scream the loudest out of a Supreme Court opinion about how terrible their colleagues are, which is basically the dominating tone and theme of every opinion written by Rebecca Bradley in the last 3, 4, 5 years. Now, the woman that is attempting to replace her, the Republican here, is a woman by the name of Maria Lazar. And she has quite the record. She is an extreme right-to-lifer. She's been endorsed by both Wisconsin Right to Life as well as Pro-Life Wisconsin. And remember, Wisconsin Right to Life, of the pro, quote-unquote pro-life organizations in the state, that one's probably one of the most extreme. They proposed to make abortion illegal in nearly every case. In other words, very, very limited exceptions for rape or incest. They proposed an even stricter abortion ban in Wisconsin. They proposed to prosecute healthcare professionals criminally. She's got quite an astounding, very far-right pro-life record. Oh, yeah, she loves the unfair maps. Loves the unfair maps. I'm going to talk more about Maria Lazar tomorrow, so you're not going to want to miss that this show tomorrow. We've got more special guests as well. Thanks to all the great texters and callers today. And thank you for listening. Have a great afternoon. It's beautiful outside. Get out there and enjoy it. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.